The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I am Seth Liebson. I'm dispensing with my monologue because when you have the neighborhood I have, the blessed neighborhood of friends and community that I have, and they're just walking up and down the streets of Camelback, kind of muttering to themselves, and you can grab them and bring them into the studio, you take advantage of that. And to that degree, we're going to have a bunch of friends in show today, including our dear friend Zena, the free speech princess warrior, also known as Ann Atkinson. We were talking about Ann yesterday because she brought us some shirts. She brought us some Don't Immanentize the Eschaton shirts, which was so nice of you, Ann. Ann is the former executive director of the Lewis Center at ASU. So good to have you in studio, Ann. I love it when you're here. And our friend Hugh Holman's going to join us in a little bit as well.
Well, thank you, Seth. It is always great to be here. We have a lot to talk about today, and I'm excited to dig into this extreme left-wing bias that continues to cripple our country. And I'm excited with some good news today to applaud the work of people who are standing up to these institutions.
Good. I want to get to that in a moment. I want to give props to Mr. Bill over here, who had this idea to interview you on this issue. The issue that we spent a lot of time on the show talking about yesterday, Uri Berliner, this longtime, decades-long reporter and journalist at National Public Radio at NPR, gets suspended for writing a piece about the bias at NPR, the internal bias at NPR. Even though he himself a liberal, he was talking about how the trajectory of bias has become more and more crushing. He got suspended for writing that piece in the Free Press, Barry Weiss's outlet, right? And then there was some negative things said about him by Catherine Marr, who is the new CEO of NPR, and he said, it's about as much fun as I can take anymore, and he left. And Mr. Bill said, sounds an awful lot like Ann Atkinson's story, and I bet she'd have some thoughts on this. So with that lead-in, and thanks to Mr. Bill, Ann Atkinson.
Well, I'm not going to bury the lead here. So NPR's CEO, Catherine Marr, said, and Christopher Rufo reported this, the number one challenge in her fight against disinformation is the First Amendment in the United States, which makes it a little bit tricky to censor bad information and the influence peddlers who spread it. And in that, I think, is the underlying issue in so many of these instances. That's from the current CEO, Catherine Marr, of NPR. NPR has turned in from really a public service institution with a public mission and an obligation to consider all things, hence its show, Considering All Things, and it's really become an activist. And that started over time, as we learned in this story, as you've discussed with your listeners, this started really when Trump came into public life. And the former CEO, John Lansing, ordered NPR to be agents of change, activists, and they made DEI their North Star to their mission. And that's the crux of the issue here, is NPR is supposed to have a public service, serve the public good, and they've turned into what we would expect from an activist arm of a media organization.
And it's not just NPR. It seems every major outlet of journalism, or once respected, or at least elite journalism, conventional journalism, is for a month showing us their hand, melding their hand, if you will. Caitlin Collins, was that her name at CNN, Mr. Bill, who did the Donald Trump town hall? Yes, I think it was Caitlin Collins, and she got so much pushback for giving Donald Trump an hour. This is about 6 months ago, and people within CNN were biting each other's throats. How could we give Donald Trump an hour? And the CEO then of CNN said, all that aside, CNN's mission is to shape the news, and at least we did that. Is that the mission? Is it to shape the news, or is it to report the news? Because the other quote Ms. Marr gave at her TED Talk was that truth is not the best starting point for journalism because it keeps us from getting things done. Boy, the truth and that tricky First Amendment, right?
Absolutely. Well, Uri Berliner had a memo, and he included a comment that addresses exactly what you just said. He said, an open-minded spirit no longer exists within NPR, and now predictably we don't have an audience that reflects America. He goes on, there's an unspoken consensus about the stories we should pursue and how they should be framed. It's frictionless. One story after another about instances of supposed racism, transphobia, signs of the climate apocalypse, Israel doing something bad, and the dire threat of Republican policies. And what I'm seeing, whether it's at Barrett, the Honors College, or ASU, or NPR, or so many of these institutions, leadership is trying to define an Overton window and include things in the instance of Uri Berliner's report, like Russiagate, the Hunter Biden laptop, the COVID origin story, as outside of the Overton window.
Mm-hmm.
And who gets to decide what is an acceptable Overton window?
Mm-hmm.
These people are self-appointed arbiters of what they think is acceptable.
Right. And what they think is acceptable to move a narrative in a certain direction, to move voters into a certain direction. It all comes with a partisan sort or an ideological axe. And we saw it with the New York Times. We saw it with the New York Times and Tom Cotton. We have now seen it with CNN. We saw it with MSNBC and Ronna McDaniel. She lasted all of, 72 hours, maybe? And the cry there was that she was an election denier, erasing evidently 7 years of MSNBC and CNN happily bruiting about that Donald Trump was not legitimately elected. So it's very much with a partisan axe and angle that they do this with. And it's not just journalism. It's education, too. Starting in the late 60s, early 70s, people were writing books like Teaching as a Subversive Activity or The Education of the Oppressed. That education was no longer about teaching things like geometry and geography and reading and the rest, or history. It was to send students out with a political mission, right? Same with journalism today. It's no different.
Precisely. It's no different, and they're not trying to change. I think there's a clear awareness of what they are, what they have become. And when Berliner brought up that, look, in our D.C. headquarters for NPR, we have 87 registered Democrats and on our editorial as our editors and zero registered Republicans. And the response to that should have been, wow, well, if we truly believe in viewpoint diversity, we should have editors that are truly have diverse viewpoints. But that is what they want, right? They want to become activists. The universities, NPR, these media outlets, they want to be activists. They want to influence and shape the world in a way that's acceptable to them. But people are waking up. Uri Berliner, I don't know him. I don't know what was in his head, but certainly anybody that speaks out does so with the knowledge that there's going to be backlash,
yeah, right?
And I am so encouraged that we keep hearing story after story of people who are speaking up.
Yeah.
And at great personal expense, maybe for now, I'm really excited to see what he does with the rest of his career and where he goes from here. But I applaud his effort, and I so encourage more people in these positions, speak up. Right. Take the backlash for now, but do the right thing. And maybe societally we'll wake up so that we have institutions that do reflect more of the American public instead of what these leaders like Catherine Mayer and John Lansing, former CEO at NPR, desire.
Well, that's why I give you the nickname Xena, because you did this. You wrote in The Wall Street Journal about your experience with that and Arizona State University. And with an Archimedean lever, you went to the legislature and you've started making some changes and some noise down there. And there are some optimistic beacons we're beginning to see, aren't there?
Absolutely. Well, part of the Lewis Center's Health, Wealth, and Happiness speaker program were accusations coming from the deans at Barrett, their crisis management team, their head of PR, telling me, and what would have stopped you from inviting the KKK to campus because Dennis Prager basically shares the same values. So in a way, my issue's tied into DEI. Mm-hmm. And so we've had some major wins in DEI. ASU just announced this week they're no longer going to mandate the DEI quizzes that require all staff to pledge allegiance to the flag of DEI. That's a big win. That's through the Goldwater Institute, Dr. Owen Anderson, an ASU professor. Goldwater is suing on his behalf and others. there have been great wins. It all stemmed from people just having courage, being respectful, going through a process.
You showed them how. You showed the pathway to how to do that with respect, class, and brains. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. There's no two people I know who know the field of education better than you and our friend Hugh Hallman. And I'd like to bring him in to join the discussion on a few other angles as well, if we can, when we come right back. Ann Atkinson is my guest. We'll be joined by the former mayor of Tempe, Hugh Hallman, also former school principal and a builder of schools today. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I think, and I say I think because I used to know what my bumper music was. I have no idea what that discord is that you're throwing at us, young David. What is that?
You don't know the West German sound of 99 red balloons.
Oh, yeah, 99 Luft balloons. Sure, of course. Is that what this is?
Yes.
One would not know that because this is not the famous part of the song, but you will get there. There it is, yeah.
Okay. Maybe we should have started there.
Yeah, maybe we could have started there, but that's okay. I'm happy any day I get to see my two dear friends, Hugh Hallman and Ann Atkinson, both of whom are in studio with us today. And I just want to tag on one more point to what we were speaking about with the bias in education and journalism and bring Hugh into the conversation as well and add some higher ed elements as well. It's working in a way. You know, these institutions of education and journalism that have almost universally made themselves liberal left, it has a feedback loop that works in the larger society. So when we go out to talk public policy or politics with someone, more likely than not, that person is going to be informed by something they heard on NPR and then maybe repeated on CNN later that day. And, oh, in the New York Times, there's an article that says the same thing. I was listening to someone earlier today on the radio saying it's really, though, like a bullet ricocheting. It's a single shot that's just firing off different walls. And it's just that all those walls want that bullet to be propelled, that single bullet to be – that single narrative to be propelled. And it works on a society. It works on a society that doesn't know to go to talk radio or doesn't know to go to some conservative website or doesn't know how to search out a Hillsdale, if you will. A society that didn't have to know how to do that once upon a time. Anyway, just an added thought to everything we've said. Hugh, Ann, feel free to take it any way you want. You want to say one more thing, Ann?
I will say NPR is no longer considering all things.
Right.
And I have a school teacher, mother-in-law. She was a school teacher for 35 years in an elementary school in Colorado. She has religiously listened to NPR, and that is her source of a balanced viewpoint of the world. But they've changed. They've left her. Mm-hmm. They left her behind. She's not a super far left.
Does she know it?
She's becoming to know it,
uh-huh.
Right? And yeah. And things like this, when Mr. Berliner reports how NPR has lost touch with skepticism, mm-hmm. Or fairness, and they've put political ideology over journalism and has given us all these examples why. She's starting to see that. I think some subscribers have access to other information. They're starting to wake up a bit. And the masses that listen are the, I think, 86-87% of the listeners reported by Mr. Berliner are Democrat. And, you know, they're subscribing right to what they're receiving. But some are awake.
Two that aren't Democrat that listen every Saturday morning for about 20 minutes are Hugh Hallman and myself, because we play this game as we meet to run every Saturday morning, which is how long it will take NPR until they inject LGBTQ into the story or make it the story. And we're getting there within about 30 seconds of turning on NPR these days. Everything is LGBTQ over there.
Ann has made the point that the NPR has now gone as far left, and it's CNN. But here's the distinction that is so frightening to me and why I'm delighted that Ann's here, because we can then pivot into how it's impacted her life through higher education in the same way. That is, NPR is sponsored by corporations and a variety of other sources, but it also gets grants and gets payments from its local stations. So why did this happen? Ronald Reagan said, it's enough of having NPR as a public radio station funded by the federal government beating me up about the fact that I'm a conservative. That was 40, 50 years ago. I forget how old I am now, 40 years ago. And so NPR got weaned off the federal budget directly, but it didn't, because the Corporation for Public Broadcasting then got filled in, and it's full of federal money, which it then doles out to the local stations that turn around and pay it back to NPR as their subscriber fees. So this is how nonsensical the system has become. And you and I as taxpayers, the three of us sitting in this room, pay taxes to the federal government to have the federal government give it to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, to give it to local stations, to give it to NPR, to beat the crud out of us for being conservatives. That's what's so wrong about this, is that we have the federal government taking sides, the left side for the Democrats in Congress and their party, to beat the daylights out of conservatives for believing what we believe, and then getting increasingly despicable about the language they use towards us when they liken Dennis Prager to the KKK or Nazis, a man who's made it his life's work to study what's happened to the Jewish people being called a Nazi. And that brings us to Anne's experience and higher education, because a huge proportion of public education, meaning paid for by states and the national government in a few very tiny instances, is funded through a variety of sources, including student loans and grants that students have to get from the federal government in order to fund their educations. Why? Because everybody knows that the federal government is now going to play in this subsidy game. And by throwing more and more money into it, college tuition can be increased. I know that sounds a little counterintuitive, but it is not. If there was no federal money in higher education now, tuition would be significantly lower.
Right. The Bennett thesis, right?
Correct.
The Bennett hypothesis. The more the federal aid, the higher the tuition.
That is correct. In the same way that when you mandate electric vehicles in California and then subsidize it to make sure, well, what happens to the sticker price?
Yeah.
It goes through the roof.
Yeah.
Well, I don't buy an electric vehicle in California new. I wait until they come off of their corporate leases 2 years later and get dumped into Arizona in the used market. And the smart car electric that cost $36,000 in 2016, I bought for $8,000 in Arizona in 2018. That's what subsidy does. And worse, just like NPR gets subsidized to beat the hell out of conservatives, public education is now being subsidized by the federal government, and that subsidy is being used to bludgeon conservative universities. And so when we come back, I'm going to put Anne on the horns of a dilemma, because the most striking example of that is in our own state. And conservatives listening to us need to come to the barricades and help Grand Canyon University against a federal government bureaucracy that is now calling it out. Not because it has done anything horrifically wrong, but in my view, when you start digging all the way down to it, it's because it is a private Christian university. And I want to make sure we talk about this in the third hour, if nothing else, Seth, about how bigotry is now being acceptably used against only one group and maybe two, Christians and Jews. And that subsidy is what's so horrific about it. It's bad enough that discrimination takes place in our society, but to have our federal government subsidizing it on college campuses, subsidizing it on the airways through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is not only absurd, it's despicable. And we ought to be doing something about that.
Thomas Jefferson said, "To endow a belief I don't subscribe to is my definition of tyranny." That's what they are making us do. Ann Atkinson and Hugh Hallman and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Taylor Tomlinson is making her highly anticipated return to Encore Theater at Wynn Las Vegas this weekend with back-to-back shows Friday and Saturday, April 19th through 20th. On the heels of the recent debut of her late-night comedy show After Midnight on CBS and her recent Netflix special Have It All, Tomlinson will be performing Taylor Tomlinson live in Las Vegas at the intimate one-of-a-kind venue known for her quick wit, carefully honed act-outs, and ruthless appetite for laughs. She is undeniably hilarious. She'll be returning in June with another set of back-to-back shows, June 7th through 8th, 2024, as well, and is a must-watch. Do I need to say anything more about that?
Nothing. Just if you're out there in the audience listening, keep on listening, because there might be two seats in the audience for one of those June shows for you,
and
there just may be a giveaway next week.
Excellent. Anne Atkinson, Hugh Hallman, my guests, you were bringing in the issue of what's going on with the Secretary of Education and Grand Canyon University. You know, it's interesting. After all the indictments you were making,
all of which I agree with, on public education and public higher education. Notice what is going on here. They simply don't want us to exist. So a private university forms itself around a set of principles that might be a little bit different than where the culture of public education is, generally speaking. And they are doing everything they can to disappear this private Christian college.
They being the Department of Education. Yeah, well, right. Let's start with, I made the assertion in the last segment that it is now acceptable to discriminate against Christians and, as it's increasingly obvious, Jews. We're not making this up. Just think about, I believe it wasn't it, Glendale District that had board decide to
no longer take teachers
from a Christian university who would be
from Arizona Christian. That's right.
Correct. Yep. They eliminated a contract precisely because one of the board members said the university's philosophy could not be tolerated within that district. And it was because the university had posted and had on their website the concept that a marriage is between a man and a woman, and therefore any student who studied there must be a bigot with respect to orientation issues. And this particular board member said that since she called herself a long list of descriptors about her sexual orientation, and that therefore she could not tolerate having anybody who'd attended that university teach. So this is a process that we're seeing going on, and I'm making the assertion, as you look at the Department of Education's effort to undermine Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university, you have to read things like this. So the Secretary of the Department of Education, remember we didn't used to have the Department of Education when education was strong.
When we had education, and
through the process of the Department of Education imposing one-size-fits-all education systems throughout the country, we now have Miguel Cardona, the Secretary of Education, not just coming after Grand Canyon University for wrongdoing, but let me read sort of what's occurred. You had Rosa DeLauro, the Democrat from Connecticut, ask Cardona what the administration is doing to, quote, shut down GCU, which she then added was a, quote, predatory for-profit school, unquote. So apparently making profit is predatory. Nonprofit is not, except when, I'm going to step aside for a second, our state university, Arizona State University, has on its website, it posts its tuition and costs for a student. If you're an out-of-state student, you would pay $53,877.
I have no idea.
If you're an in-state student, you pay $36,103. That's not predatory, where Grand Canyon University charges all students, in-state or out-of-state, because they don't discriminate between one's original residence, at most living on campus, $33,662.
No idea.
It's a higher price than some might think. The tuition is $16,500. And yet, with all costs included, they are, for in-state students, $3,000 cheaper than Arizona State University, a public university that is not predatory. And they all have the same opportunity to receive funding from the federal government through grants and loans and other such things. But yet, to finish this out, we have a predatory for-profit school, and Cardona, in response to asking what he's doing to shut it down, said, quote, we are cracking down not only to shut them down, but to send a message not to prey on students, period, unquote. I think what they're mad about is that students at Grand Canyon University might actually be caught on campus praying, and that's why they want to shut them down.
Nicely said, Hugh. I'll have Ann Atkinson weigh in when we come right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Delighted to have in studio with us Ann Atkinson and our dear friend Hugh Holman as well. Grand Canyon University, ASU, discrimination, pressure, Ann, anything you want. Ann's so tough she swims with sharks. I want people to know that. She's planning a shark swim. It's her second time doing it, right off the Farallon Islands, the like West Coast capital of great white sharks.
I assume that's why she's missing the little toe on her right
foot. I can get you a toe.
Yeah, appetizer.
I can get you a toe.
2 miles swim across the San Francisco Bay in the nice, refreshing cold salt water with 4 species of sharks. It'll be nice among friends.
And lawyers.
She survived ASU. She can survive the Farallons.
Piece of cake. Yeah. It's interesting that the characterization of Grand Canyon University is a predatory for-profit school, and this entire characterization of what they're doing is the opposite of GCU. To any listeners, have you gone to GCU? Have you taken a tour? Have you been to the campus?
Young David is a graduate, as you know.
It is a remarkable place with, I think, 26,000 students in person. But here's the thing. This entire focus is on GCU preying on students. But did you listen to Hugh Hallman and what he just said about tuition? GCU has not raised their tuition in 13 years. They go to great lengths. I'll say it again. They have not raised tuition in 13 years. That is not the behavior of a university that's preying on these poor first-generation students, as our congressmen and women have been characterizing. This is simply a witch hunt. As Brian Mueller said on Fox News, he said there is no explanation. This makes no sense. It makes no sense. There are wild allegations and wild fees of $37 million for what I think is a total bogus claim. They're accusing GCU of not disclosing something which GCU voluntarily disclosed a fee of its doctoral program. GCU was fined $37.7 million. Do you know that Penn State and Michigan State, for failing to address Jerry Sandusky and Larry Nassar, they were fined $2.4 million and $4.5 million respectively.
Wow.
And yet somehow this GCU non-issue warrants a $37.7 million fine, and the Department of Education on a mission to shut down a university that's a gem in Arizona.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I don't think it is inexplicable. And while the president of the university is hesitant to level charges, I don't mind doing so. Because when you have a congressman asking a question that's that loaded about how are you shutting this down, with the secretary of the Department of Education responding that that is actually his mission, it is easier to understand in the light of, as I mentioned, that you have a private and Christian university in the crosshairs. But also, it's easier, as you noted, the Grand Canyon University now has about 26,000 students. There is no greater threat to public education systems and the leftists teaching in them than to have a Christian university go in a very short time from 800 students to 26,000 students by choice. We don't want those kinds of choices exercised in our population, and we continue to see the effort to stop these kinds of choices from being available shut down. And that's why I think it's easy to explain.
Young David, he stepped away from the microphone. Sorry. If I had a producer. I was just about to compliment him, too. I guess it's a good time to compliment him.
Yes.
As a graduate of GCU, though, I wanted to get his input on this. But I can certainly use him as an example of the kind of student that GCU can produce. And no one would look at young David and think this is a man who suffered 4 years of predation by a money-grubbing, insufficient educational institution of higher learning, right?
No, any predation he's suffering is because he's now working at this station. That would be the only – but to bring us back, we really started this hour about the NPR sort of effort to shut down a dispute within its own ranks about how that government-subsidized messenger is now limiting speech. And Grand Canyon University exercises speech in a very different way, very different teaching. And so now you have a campus where you don't see students protesting the United States or seeking to support Hamas murdering Jews in Israel and a variety of other things. You see a very different campus life and style there, represented, I think, by Anne now serving in those trenches. And it should not be lost on us that we are seeing this, and I agree with you, Anne, we hope that there's more of it, protests from within. We saw at our own NPR station one of its longest-serving commentators finally leave for exactly the same reasons that were raised in the article that got a fellow pushed aside. A longtime friend of mine is a producer and director at an NPR station in Washington State and is decrying exactly these same things. He is now being DEI'd to death because he is a white male and he doesn't fit any of the right boxes. And so now anything he says is questioned in any way it possibly can be bent that he's a racist, bigot, white oppressor in that kind of environment. Well, we're pushing back against that, but it's now not just at NPR and in public radio. It's at public universities, and those public universities are being supported by our Department of Education trying to shut down competitors who are offering a different message.
Those public universities are spending their efforts to divide students based on their characteristics at birth and their ideologies. And places like GCU are coming up with new and innovative ways to get kids involved in the economy. It's diametrically opposed to what we're seeing in these public universities.
One of the interesting things to me about all this is that it's one thing to talk about a public square that is increasingly denuded of diversity of viewpoint, diversity of thought, diversity of intellectual pursuit. But notice what they've done with their control and their unstoppable ideological drive. They're now going into the areas that we never thought government would be going into, at least originally. They're now saying the privates can't exist. Not only certain viewpoints can exist in the public square, they're now saying certain viewpoints can't exist in the private square. The intensity of their march is, I think, highlighted by this fact that you simply cannot exist. We do not want you to exist, not at NPR if you're a conservative, and not in higher education if you are private or, God forbid, religious. That's what they're saying. That this is what they are trying to do. They are trying to level the entire environment of education and journalism, all culture, really, of anything that might be, I don't know, one click to the right of Joe Lieberman, let us say.
And I would take umbrage with only one statement you made in that commentary, and that is unstoppable. It is stoppable.
Okay, good.
And I think we've demonstrated that. Anne is a hero in that effort, took to our legislature what had gone on at Arizona State University in an effort to give it voice, and things are changing as a result. And my hat's off to you, Anne, for being that kind of a hero.
You are going to cover my second hour for me.
Yeah, you've got to duck out for about an hour.
I got to go hang with the ducks. But I'm going to let Anne have the last word on this in the next segment with us when we come right back. Little Carefree Highway there coming at you from the vocal cords of Gordon Lightfoot, written on Carefree Highway here in Phoenix, or just north of Phoenix. Ann Atkinson and Hugh Hallman have been my guests. We've been talking about journalism and higher ed. Ann, you went through it. You swam the Farallon Islands of academia. What would you say in closing or in final consideration of this?
I would say our public universities, especially ASU, my experience came from Barrett the Honors College, consistently divide students based upon who they were at birth, race, gender, sex, into groups. GCU, who was under attack here by our federal government, being accused of being a predatory for-profit school, they're missional, they're not covenant. All students are welcome. You don't need to be Christian to attend. If you go there on campus, people are warm, they smile. These students attend chapel every Monday, thousands of students together in the basketball arena. It's the most beautiful scene. And what I have seen at public universities, at ASU and at Barrett the Honors College, my alma mater, unfortunately, is that when you send your kids to these places, some have a good experience, but as a parent, you are playing Russian roulette with your kids' values, and I don't see that at GCU.
Hugh and Ann, would you have different considerations today about sending your kids to college than you would have in your case 10 years ago, Hugh, or that, you know, you would have, Ann, when we were going to college? Well, I think a lot of parents are rethinking it.
I have young children. They're 2 and 6, and we're already talking about school tracks. I would not send my children to ASU. There are so many great professors and wonderful programs. I'm a graduate of W.P. Carey. I think they have phenomenal programs in place because it is Russian roulette with their values, because DEI pervades everything, even where you wouldn't expect to find it. I'm not taking that risk. I'm spending my time raising these children right, and I won't take that risk. But from what I see of GCU, and I've spent a fair amount of time on that campus with their team, I know a number of their leaders, and I would send my children to GCU in a heartbeat.
Hugh, would you reconsider if you had 18-year-olds?
Oh, I already have, and it was with some trepidation that I sent one of my sons to Claremont Men's College, or Claremont McKenna College, from which we both hailed. One son went to ASU, one went to NAU, and one went to Washington University. So there were, I just described four institutions, but I have only three sons. One moved from one to another. And the challenge we faced in each instance was exactly what Anne's articulated. The social environment is very risky now, and what you are putting your children to is some risk.
Well, thank you both, Ann Atkinson and Hugh Hallman. Hugh, you're going to stick around for a little bit, help me out here. And Ann, it's always good to see you. And look who's here, John Shattuck.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.